As we have noted on another occasion here, as it says there in verse 16, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly. That is, in a very large part, the key to living out everything else that the apostle speaks about in the verses that follow. The man or woman who lets the word of Christ dwell in them richly will, from their redeemed heart, be singing. Maybe not audibly, but there will be joy there, because through the word we understand not only what we have in Jesus Christ, but what he's able to do for us and what he is doing for us right now, even as he is at God's right hand and makes intercession for his own people. A very important verse in this chapter is verse 15, where it says, "And let the peace of God rule in your hearts." I think I said on another occasion that the word rule there is a word that refers to an umpire, one who, you take a tennis match and you have the umpire there, their word is final. And really, unless there's some sort of an inquiry, what they say goes. And really it says here, let the peace of God rule or be the umpire. It also means settle all questions. And we all have questions. And here is a verse that says, let the peace of God settle all questions in your heart. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly. You'll notice here the implication here that it is a Christian who has to let this happen. Let the peace of God rule in your hearts. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly. And if that doesn't happen, and we become hard and indifferent and turn in on ourselves and become just begin to behave in a cold way towards the things of God, then the peace will go. It'll still be well, that's true. It'll still be well with our souls. We'll be justified, but the peace will flee away. And when the word of Christ does not dwell on us richly, then all of the other things that we read of in these verses can come into great difficulty. Verse 17 is probably the key verse in all of the chapter, where it says, "And whatsoever ye do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ." And when you and I think of that today, it covers all of our lives. It covers us in the public eye. It covers us in the place where it seems that no one else really sees us. The Lord knows all about us. He knows our motives, and he knows what we do and why we do it. And he also knows what we say and why we say it as well. As we come to this passage, we have noted, I think in another week, we looked there last week at wives and husbands. Or that was a while ago we looked at the wives and husbands. But certainly regarding that, we want to say, and we want to be very honest today as we look at this passage, there are no perfect wives. Now, I know that every one of us think our wives are perfect, and that's good. You need to tell them that. You'd be amazed the difference it makes. You tell them they're perfect. And husbands like to hear that too, mind you. But folks, there are no perfect wives. Humanity is a fallen race. And we're redeemed sinners, but sinners nonetheless. And we're not perfect. No perfect husbands, no perfect wives, no perfect parents, no perfect children, no perfect employers, and no perfect employees. You see, the apostle, when he comes to this section, he's referring to the houses in those days, and I believe in this occasion, to the situation in a house where there are servants. Now, it's very important to remember here that at this time, it seemed that, well, it's for sure that slavery was an established institution. And in all that Paul says, he does not clearly condemn it. He lays down principles that would lead to the eradication of slavery. Generally, I know that still there are certain areas where, indeed even here, where bad things have been happening, but slavery as an institution is generally gone. And certainly when we look at this passage, we want to think about this here. I mentioned earlier the ideal home exhibition. A mom and dad, some children there, servants. Then you have the one who is the master of the house, you have the husband and the wife there, and all of that. And there's none of them perfect, but the folks, when we look at a passage like this, what we want to say to ourselves is, let's aim high. Let's aim high to be that best wife, or that best husband, or that best servant, or that best child, because it is well pleasing to the Lord, as it says there in the word in this passage. And you and I, as we look this morning at this passage, I thought, well, not everyone here is a parent, not everyone a husband or a wife, not everyone an employee, not everyone an employer. So to focus one message on each of them would perhaps be missing out a lot of the congregation on some occasions. So I thought to give a short word on each of the ones that are mentioned here. I trust that what I say will help you, and the category into which you fall, that you will be helped and encouraged. The title I've given as I studied this out during the week was that the title is, No is not always negative. No is not always negative. Now, I want first of all here to look at verse 20 and see what it says about children in the home. And the title of this point is No Disrespect. No disrespect. Look at verse 20. It says, Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well pleasing unto the Lord. Obedience here in all things. It has been rightly said and repeated time and time again, perhaps by you, and I know by many, many, many people down through the years, that if there's no obedience in the home, then there's no respect for authority anywhere. There's no respect for authority in the school, no respect for the authority of the law, and no respect for divine authority. What God says, you've heard people many a time on the television, even unsaved people, and you've heard them saying, where's the parents of these people? What's wrong with their homes that these 10-year-olds are out throwing bricks or bottles or whatever it is? What's going on? And it is an exhibition of not obeying in the home. There ought to be that authority. If there's not, then the mother and father have failed. But if the child is rebelling, it is an indication that all things are not well in the home. Now, I know that some people bring their children up the very, very best they can, and their children still rebel and do everything that is wrong. That has often happened. It's a tragedy, and then parents certainly cannot be blamed. But generally here's a great principle. There's to be no disrespect for parents in the home. Do you see the word where it says, obey your parents in all things? What does it mean? I'll tell you what it means. It means obey your parents in all things. The word obedience there actually means to put under. Put yourself under their authority. You see, in this section, as we've said, Paul is mentioning so much that we have to consciously do. Even over in the earlier verses there, he was saying, put on this, put off that. Lie not one to another. All of these things that we had today, I mentioned them there. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, and let the peace of God rule in your hearts. Responsibility lies with all of us. And here is the responsibility of the child in the home. And the reference here, I've looked it up, it is not referring just to little knee-high ones. It's referring to people who live in the home, whatever age they may be, who are there with their parents, and it is putting under parental direction. Now, the only time, and I've looked at many of what the commentators had to say on this, the only time that a child in the home is to not obey parental direction is if it goes against God's word. So that means obey your parents in all things. But I want to say one thing here very clearly. This is not to say that boys and girls are to be dictated to. I certainly believe in my home, and I've always endeavoured to do this, that my boys should be their own men. And perhaps you're thinking as well, I want my daughter to be her own woman. And I want my son to be his own man. Because we are individuals and there must be individuality. I'm not in any way interested, and I'll mention this, I'm not in any way interested in trying to mould my children into just being me and liking all the things that I like and being interested in everything that I'm interested in. I want them to be their own man. Because humanity is made up of individuals. So it is not a dictating that because there is some sort of whim in my mind or some bee that I have in my bonnet that I'm going to make sure that mine just believes just the way I do. Nothing to do with the Bible, but it's a wee thought I have, and you know, I want them to believe what I believe regarding. No, we don't go down that line. Because that can really, and I will mention this a little bit later on in a minute or two, but that can really go against earning respect in the home. Now, this disobedience to parents, I want to just look at a couple of references. I know some of you today are very young, and some of you just a little bit older than that, but it is a mark of those who are very ungodly. That's what it is a mark of. Over there in 2 Timothy chapter 3, 2 Timothy chapter 3, and the verse 2, and this is really a reference to, it's mentioning some of the awful things that will mark people in the last days. That's what it says in verse 1. Perilous times shall come. We're in them. They're getting worse by the day. There's no doubt about that. It says, for men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents. Do you see, even among all of those things that are so wrong there, disobedience to parents is put in, unthankful, unholy. That which marks a fallen, broken, ungodly society. And we have in the middle of it disobedience to parents. Over there in the book of Romans, there are similar words. Romans chapter 1 and it's verse 30. Again, there's some awful things mentioned here. You'll see there that there is envy and murder, deceit, and backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents. So this is not a light thing. In fact, when you read over there in Exodus chapter 20, there is to be that honor thy father and thy mother. And it is a happy home where there is that honoring of the father and mother. And I know that while we are a small congregation here, we have quite a number of younger people, children and younger people. And many young people are struggling to know God's will for their lives. There are some who have some interest in the things of God, and they are just struggling to know what God's will is for them. Obedience to parents is a good starting point. It is a good starting point. So as we look here at verse 20, and we look at this passage, we can write across it, no disrespect. And I tell you something. I have seen and heard things, not in my home, thankfully, but I have seen and heard things that would make you lose sleep. And all around us, and we don't like to look at it this way sometimes, but it seems that society is falling apart. But as goes the home, so goes the nation. And these are very, very important words, brothers and sisters, that the apostle is speaking to this church at Colossae, because they needed to have this godliness that he wanted to them to display in the face of heresy. They needed to have it in their homes. And they needed to display it in their homes. Again, it is not here with the children. It is not a dictatorship. A child is not simply an item that parents are given from the Lord, that they may mould it into what I want it to be. I don't refer there to godliness. I'm referring here to petty things. Just to be a wee me. And everything. The child has to be an individual. And it's good to be your own man or your own woman. All of us in our various areas of life. I work with the session and I work with the committee here. And you in your work
and wherever you are, you have to learn to work with people. We must work with people, but we must be individuals. And nobody really appreciates yes men in life, or yes women. We're good. It's good to be our own person, but remember, no disrespect. No disrespect in the home. But I want to move on to another thought here, and this is the next verse. It says, verse 21, "Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged." Now, I want to say right away that while we have the word fathers there, that word could easily have been translated parents. It's the same word that is translated parents in Hebrews chapter 11 and 23. You see, in the home, the father, as we mentioned before, is the head of the home. There's no question about that. But the mother guides the home. That's for sure. The mother guides the home while the father is the head of the home. She does so much in the home that is so important when it comes to these things. So the thought here is of parents, even though it says fathers. And the thought that I've given to the title I've given to this point is no provoking. No provoking. Well, we can see what it says there. It says, fathers or parents, provoke not your children to anger. Children, as they grow up, and again, I have a good degree of experience being the oldest of eight in our own family at home and having seven myself. Children, as they grow, they develop their personalities. Their personalities. They develop their gifts. And they are to develop their skills. And if they're coming into the home all the time and they have skills or gifts, and I or someone else is shouting them down and saying, no, I don't want you to do that. I want you to do something else. Don't worry about that skill or gift. No, I think you should do this, or you'd need to do that. Or the word provoke here is an interesting word. It actually means to exasperate, which simply means provoke, or it means to irritate or to discourage. In fact, it carries the thought of discouraging to such an extent that the spirit is broken. What an awful situation. And the child loses heart. And they become, the thought too behind it is, the thought of becoming sullen. And becoming so discouraged that they just fall in and they just have no thinking of their own value, their own gifts, their own skills, how the Lord can use their own personality. That should never be the case. Because a child should be encouraged at home. And again, they have all different personalities and different skills and different gifts that can be fine-tuned, as it were, as the years go by. And they can be develop those skills and those gifts and their personalities and become very useful people in society. That is what children are to be reared to do, to be good for others and for themselves and for the Lord. And it says here there's to be no provoking by the parents. Now, how would I provoke my children? Well, number one, and again the things we mentioned, they're sometimes heartbreaking because we know of situations where these things are happening. Number one is favoritism. Favoritism. I have heard people say before, oh, he is my favourite child. I thought, that is so awful. What about the others? In one extreme situation, I know a case where, and you may find this hard to believe, folks, but this mother who was now had been on her own with these three children, and it's not that long ago, and there were two daughters, two little daughters and a little boy, and she bought the daughters birthday presents. She wouldn't buy the boy one. Just a wee boy. Under 10. How would you do that? With your own children. And it was known to him as well. And I was speaking to people who were almost in tears. Who knew about it. But it's none of their business to intervene. Or to say anything. Favoritism can do what I mentioned earlier. Provoking, irritating, discouraging. Making people become withdrawn. And give up, breaking the spirit of the children. That is one of the things that must not be done, favoritism. But another thought is this, unrealistic goals. Unrealistic goals. It's good to encourage your children to do the best they can. But
to set unrealistic goals for them is totally wrong. And whether it is school or work or anywhere else, it would be wrong for me to come and say, oh, listen, I need you to get straight A's in your A-levels. I need you to do that. You can do it and you'll let us down if you don't do it. That would be an awful thing to say. And on the other hand, to say, oh, don't you worry, you'll get a job, you'll become very wealthy. You'll become, and then the child gets it into their head, I must become wealthy. Well, dear, help us, of all that we look for in this world is worldly wealth. That is wrong as well, because of the setting unrealistic goals for the child. And it's that idea of push, 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 which can really discourage a child. Encourage them. Encourage them the very best we can. If they want advice and they need advice, give them a bit of advice. But we can't set unrealistic goals for them. Remember, they're individuals. They have their own personalities, their own gifts, their own skills. So one of the ways we can exasperate them is by favoritism, by unrealistic goals, by failing to show any interest in them. I know that in most cases with Christians, children are not just dumped out in the street to get them out of the road. But folks, it's happening all around us. Society. Sometimes I'll be down in Belfast, seeing different people that I know, and so on, and you see them hanging about every corner. It just seems as if they're thrown out of the house to get them out of the road. And every Christian, and I know I'm speaking to the converted here today, we want to show an interest in our children. Even if I have no interest, if my children have a hobby and I have no interest in that hobby, I still show an interest in them having an interest in it. Or if it's at school, we have an interest in what they're doing and want to encourage them, as I said, without setting unrealistic goals. And a fourth way we can provoke them, I believe this with all my heart, is by trying to make them little clones. Little clones. All individuals. And if we do not want them to lose heart and the spirit to be broken and them to become sullen and discouraged and feel like failures and think that, oh, I'm not the same as daddy or I'm not the same as mummy, and all, well, they'll never be the same. They're individuals. And we cannot make clones. And I don't point the finger at anyone, but this has happened, even in Christian circles. Feel that, oh, they must be just exactly like me. That's not what the Bible teaches. You see, children, and again, we speak from experience here, children have hopes. Nothing wrong with that. I have hopes too. I have feelings. So have children. We all have thoughts, including children. Children have faults just like their parents. They have faults just like their parents. I'm going to bring to your attention an interesting thought from this point here regarding the parents or the fathers here. It's the parents actually where it says, provoke not your children. One of the shades of meaning in the word in the original actually is this. Stop nagging. I know sometimes we laugh and we make fun regarding nagging, but that's really what it means. Not that the parents should not have authority in the home to tell the child. Remember, we mentioned obedience here, and the child should be obedient. But one of the thoughts here is the thought of constant harping and constant nagging. And that is something that will greatly discourage the child. We're to bring them up in the fear and admonition of the Lord, not moulded by our petty notions. Remember, they're to be their own man or their own woman. Now, someone should never take that speck and think, I'm saying they shouldn't be taught the word. Of course they should. Should encourage them to follow on after the Lord if they're saved. The very best we can. But we're to bring them up in the fear and admonition of the Lord. And make sure that we never take away their unique personhood. Their unique personhood. Because whenever that happens, folks, and again we mentioned earlier on that some children brought up in very, very good Christian homes, they go completely wrong. That is right. Sometimes they do. But there's a thought here where it says, provoke not your children to anger. And, you know, whenever there is that exasperating,
Whether it is favoritism or unrealistic goals or showing no interest or trying to make children into clones, and whatever that is, it nearly always causes strife. And strife brings great unhappiness. And that is very bad provocation. Over there in 1 Corinthians, and 1 Corinthians chapter 3, in verse 3, Paul writing here to immature believers who have fallen into all kinds of practice and were behaving quite badly. It says here to them at the church at Corinth, he didn't write to them because he wanted to hurt them or he didn't like them. He loved them in the Lord and he wanted to help them. It says in verse 3, for ye are yet carnal, whereas there is among you envying and strife and division. Are ye not carnal? In the last place we want strife and divisions is in the home. There should be harmony in the home. Remember what we said, there's no perfect daughters, no perfect sons, no perfect mums and dads, no perfect servants in the home, no perfect masters either as far as that is concerned. And discouraged children, I want to say this, and I know that very often children get the blame, oh, he went mad, and discouraged children are easy prey for the world. People show them the hand of friendship. They show them that they make them feel as if they are very valuable, and then they draw them away out after themselves. And I know that it has happened before, and I don't want to discourage any of you young people. It has happened before that young people have used that as an excuse, saying, you know, oh, but she couldn't. Our house is all do's and don'ts, and there's never any, you know. Oh, they use that excuse, but sometimes, that has been the case. There has been this exasperation. Especially, I have to say, trying to make clones shouldn't be. But Paul says here, there's to be, in verse 20, there's to be no disrespect regarding children in the home, no provoking regarding the parents in the home. But if you look at verse 22 and 23, there's to be no deceiving. Let's see what it says there. Verse 22, servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord, and not unto men. Again, remember, folks, that in Paul's day, slavery was an established institution. And he didn't speak clearly against it. I know that. But it says they're not with eye service. What does that mean? Well, I read a very interesting story one time about a girl who was a maid in a house, a big country house. And she was a maid there. And she got saved. And some of her friends were questioning her. And they said, well, how do you know that you're saved? And her answer was this. She said, I sweep under the mats now. I don't sweep stuff under the mat. You know what I mean? Things may have looked good, but she sweeped the dust and the dirt under the mat before. Now she's a different person. And she does it not with eye service, but she does what she does as unto the Lord. And while we're so glad that there's no legal slavery in this country today, we always have employers and employees. And whenever we look here, at this passage, here's a passage that says to us, the spirit that says, what the eye doesn't see, the heart won't grieve over. It's not for Christians. It's not for Christians. Because here we're looking at everyday things. It's the servant now and the master, it's the employer and the employee. Remember, everything that we do, we ought to do it as unto the Lord. I was speaking to a man last week. It gave me an indication of how things are sometimes in society. And this is what he said to me. He spoke to me about certain individuals and he said, you know, he said they are now very wealthy. And then he went on to say this. He said they're afraid to buy anything nice. in case their friends don't like them anymore. Afraid to buy anything nice in case their friends don't like them. And that is so bad. Here's a fact of life. So many people hate the boss. People who employ them. Now, how do I know? I hear it. I heard a complaint just a couple of weeks ago about some person, and I know who it was working in the place, and their relative was giving off because she figured out that the boss of the place was getting more than they were. So that's none of her business. She gets her wages. It's envy and jealousy, and should not be found among Christians. And everything that we do, we ought to do it as unto the Lord. Here's a good thought. I read a really good story of something that happened, again, not very long ago. The boss of the shop was away. Travellers, you know about travellers, come round different businesses. Traveller came into the shop and a girl was working in it. And had got to know her over the years and know the boss as well and was talking to her, and the boss was away. And he actually suggested a shady transaction regarding certain items. And she says, no, I can't do that. And he said, you know, she says, your master is away. And she said to him, my master is always in. That's the Lord. Christian, my master is always in. He is never away. Folks, I could sit here all day and tell you stories about people who, hardworking people who have a few employees, they give them the work, they give them a wage, and people spend hours. And I mean that. They spend hours sleeping in vans in a lay-by, hidden. How do you know? I've seen them. They hide there because they're, what are they doing? They're deceiving the boss. And I've talked this over with Charles as well. No wonder this country's the way it is. It used to be that people took a pride in their work, whatever that was, but today it's, you know, just get away with, sweep it under the mat. Don't sweep under the mat. Get away with as little as you possibly can and don't do the fair day's work. There's a man one time, this is another story, it was quite a few years ago, but he got saved. He started working better. And the boss was very well pleased with him. And he was really, really, really reliable. And his workmates hated him for it. Because they wanted to bluff. And to get through with doing as little as they possibly could. And just to get their pay, and couldn't care less. But they brought together a false accusation about him. And he lost his job. He lost his job for working too hard. And folks, you and I, in our jobs, should always seek to be the best we can. Remember, there's none of us perfect. But seek to be the best we can. And apart from the Lord Jesus Christ, there's one who is the greatest example of that. He said he must be about his Father's business. There's one tremendous example in Genesis 39. If you would look with me there, please. Genesis 39. Remember, the thought here is no deceiving. We're not to do our work with eye service. And do it as unto the Lord. Remember Joseph. Joseph was a great individual in many ways. We know that. But it says concerning him, he didn't want to go to Egypt initially. But he was brought down there. It says in verse 2 of Genesis 39. And the Lord was with Joseph. And he was a prosperous man. Even when he was down working in Potiphar's house, that is. It says, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him. How did he see that the Lord was with him? He saw that Joseph was reliable. He was industrious. He was honest. And with Joseph, there was no deceiving. He didn't sweep under the mat, but he swept under the mats. And folks, while there is so much in business ends and so on that seem to be really struggling. You know, you hear stories of people who in their work and they've lost their job because they simply will not stop playing on their phone. And then there's a whole shout and they're looking for legal action and all of these things because the employer has sacked them. They're paid to work and every time the boss turns around they're fiddling on their phone texting somebody. No deceiving. And we're to do it all as unto the Lord. I always remember a story. I met a man a few years ago and I was talking to him. He told me he was a Christian, but he basically said he was backslidden. But he said, you know something? He said, I have a brother out there, and he told me where he was working for me. And he says, he worked for me for nearly 30 years. And then he got all emotional. And he said, you know, there's not a better man in this country. Not a better man in this country. He says, he's never given me one bit of bother in any way. And then he went in to tell me how reliable he was and how he worked hard and how he took his work seriously. And he really was saying to me, he's done it all as unto the Lord. That's a good testimony to have. And that's what Paul wanted the servants to have here in the house. But I want to finish off with another no. It is no mistreating. Verse 1 of chapter 4. Remember, the chapters weren't in the original manuscript. These are made up for in more recent years than that. It says there, so it follows on from chapter 3. Masters, give unto your servants that which is just and equal, knowing that ye also have a master in heaven. In those days when, and our time is gone here, when there was legal slavery and all of that, some masters, some servants who after a number of years had the opportunity to go free, they wouldn't go. They said, I love my master, I will not go out free. They wouldn't go. Now, I'm not saying they were all treated well. They all should have been treated well, and I don't believe in slavery at all, by the way. But masters, employers have a responsibility too. They have a responsibility to be fair. The old cry, oh, well, I can't, you know, I'm not getting enough money, I can't pay you properly. And I have a story of, and it's very true, because I know the people very well who were involved, and they were working for an individual, and he kept promising them overtime. And they worked overtime, and he never gave it to them. This is years ago. And he said, I can't get the money off the other people. And he says, I can't pay you to if they don't pay me. And then he would offer them another couple of weeks. He'd say, well, listen, if you do a couple of nights overtime this week, he said, I'll pay you. I'd square you up at the end of the week. Never happened. And then one day, those two people who were working for that person, they went to all the customers themselves and said, we start this business, would you buy us? And they put him out of business. Now, I'm not saying